We need to go ahead and get started simply for time, so you'll get some time to actually eat some lunch after this. So let's pray together as we begin. Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for this cooler weather. It's such a joy after the heat of the past week. And with the summer over, we thank you that you are the Lord of every season and every clime and every people. Thank you that you're here with us today. We offer ourselves to you and pray that you'll make this time a blessing to us all. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay. You up there. Yeah, just about.
We need a sense of humor. Got it.
Okay. Okay.
Well, thinking about the humor, one of the things I wanted to say was, you know, getting to America. It's quite incredible. I was born here, but been gone all my time. You can't hear me?
You can't hear me?
Well, I wasn't talking to you anyway.
Okay.
Oh, never mind. We'll talk about it later. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, we will try to speak loud enough. Let us know if we're not. Got microphones on. I'm going to give a brief introduction about the history of our friendship. Sylvester, we're going to show some photographs and some of the things an encouragement and an inspiration to him. So I changed Mark's title a little bit. You can see his main title down below, Humanity, the Image, Imagination of God. And I added a little bit into the title of Photographer, a Theologian, a Wise. And a 50-year friendship, as Janet and Vicky are much better halves here. So they're sitting in the back row, which is usual. But without those two, none of what we're going to talk about happened. So there are four of us. Sylvester's from Oklahoma. Vicky's from California. And I are both from England. And I want to begin just saying a little bit about our history, together, and how we came to know each other. How did we come to our marriages, Vicky and I, Janet and Sylvester, and the four of us to friendship? And the answer to that, of course, is these two people, Edith and Francis Schaefer. This is one of Sylvester's photographs of them from 1972, something like that, I would think. Because I think it's important of a shelter, this particular photograph. But it's one of the ones you took. And here's a clip of Francis Schaefer himself, of course, at Le Brie in Switzerland. And please let me encourage you, just as we get started, if you've got questions, either for me or Sylvester as we're going along, please don't hesitate to ask them, because I'm giving you a very brief history here so we can spend most of the time looking at photographs. And you can ask, if you've got questions, if I say something you don't understand, like what is Le Brie, for example, you know, please do.
Holly Ordway spoke a lot about language last night and how we can be using a word.
And people may have no idea what we're talking about. So if you don't understand any of my words, even though I do speak a form of English, it would be helpful if you let me know if you can't. So because of the Schaefers, the four of us met. So just a little bit of history about this, and these are going to be brief histories. Janet grew up in the home of a vicar in England. She studied French at university, and then while she was teaching French somewhere around London, she took a French assistant along to Westminster Chapel. That's where Martin Lloyd-Jones was the pastor for many years, and her friend was converted there at Westminster Chapel. And then from there, Janet went to spend some time teaching a couple of gymnases in Lausanne, a couple of public schools there, where she was an English assistant to a French teacher in French-speaking schools in that part of Switzerland. Now, while she was there in Lausanne, she was introduced to other Christians by her friend and then invited along to a Bible study. And through that, she met Maria. Maria, who is now married to a professor of art history at Wheaton College, an Englishman, Johnny Walford. Maria, not married at that time, Maria had become a Christian at Le Brien, Switzerland. And she took Janet up, they hitchhiked up to Le Brie at the weekend. So that was Janet's first introduction to Le Brie. After that year, teaching in Switzerland, Janet went back to England. And then in September 67, Le Brie in Switzerland. A few weeks there, Debbie Millman, the youngest daughter of the Schaeffers, was expecting a child, and she'd had a series of very difficult pregnancies, miscarriages, and all kinds of troubles, and she was told to basically stay in bed, and she needed somebody to come and cook for her. So Janet went to cook in the Chalet Les Sapins while Debbie was expecting her first child. A little history about Vicky. Vicky was raised on small farm, a fruit farm in central California, just south of Fresno, in a Christian home there. Went to Wheaton College, just outside Chicago in Illinois. While she was there as a student, she heard Francis Schaeffer lecturing, the lectures that later became the book, The God Who Is There. And she thought, this is too intellectual for me. And then when she heard Le Brie was a faith ministry, she thought, well, that's one place I'm never going. And but that was her first introduction to the Schaeffers. Afterwards, she worked first in San Francisco for a while, and then with the Billy Graham Organization, who she'd done some work for during the summers while she was a student at Wheaton. One of her closest friends there was the daughter of the general director of the Billy Graham Organization. And she got invited to work in the Billy Graham Organization office in Paris on the Champs-Élysées there in the center of Paris. It was a very challenging year for her, the office. She has nothing but respect for Billy Graham, but the office wasn't well run. So she was constantly receiving complaints from French staff, office from French women, and became a mediator, which she didn't wish to be. But also through the church, she went to some of the time. Through friends, she ended up with some very big questions. And a friend wrote to her and said, why don't you go down to Le Brie? She went first for the New Year's weekend. At the end of 1967, decided to go back for her Easter vacation, had the opportunity to ask Schaeffer her questions, to listen to some of his lectures. She was there just for a couple of weeks, and it was a very, very helpful time. And while there, she heard Schaeffer praying for a secretary. And so she offered her services and then went to work as Francis Schaeffer's secretary, beginning in June 16, typing up his letters, taking dictation every day, a dozen or 20 letters every day, and also the manuscripts of his first two books, The God Who Was There and Escape from Reason. Do tell people to come on in who are outside the door, and they can find a seat here. Okay. So there she was working at Le Brie in Switzerland, up in the mountains. A little history from my background. I was raised in a non-Christian home in the south of England. My dad was a passionately committed communist and atheist. I was converted at Manchester University in the north of England, where I was studying English literature and reading all the things that Holly Ordway has been talking to you about. And as a non-Christian, falling in love with Gerard Manley Hopkins and George Herbert and John Donne and etc. I already loved Tolkien. My dad had read The Lord of the Rings aloud to us when it was first published in 1955. Got it from the public library. So my favorite writers were all Christians, though I was quite unaware of that is who they were. So my conversion in many ways was similar to Holly Ordway's. I became a Christian through Michael Timshack, who was a Canadian doing his PhD in philosophy there at Manchester, and he'd been profoundly influenced by Francis Schaeffer and used to play lectures by Schaefer on Saturday nights and have discussions in his apartment. And that was the context in which I became a Christian in November 66. It turned my life completely upside down. And so when I graduated on June the 7th, the next year, June the 7th, 67, I had no idea what to do with my life, because suddenly I was glad to be alive and wanted to do something useful with it. And Mike said, well, why don't you go to Le Brie for a couple of weeks? So I hitchhiked over to Switzerland the day after graduation, left my home at 8 in the morning on Thursday, June the 8th, and managed to get to the Swiss Le Brie up in the little village of Waymo up in the Alps by lunchtime on Saturday morning. With a very small number of lifts, one from near my parents' home all the way almost to Basel in Switzerland, which was a remarkable thing. And the guy who gave me a lift got in this little van. I was just trying to get on a main road, and we got chatting. He had heard Schaefer speaking at Cambridge University just a couple of weeks before. He was a Christian, which in England, when for such a few believers, was a remarkable thing. But he was going to Vienna. I was going to Le Brie, so he took me all the way to Basel. So that was quite a good lift. Spent a couple of nights in youth hostels on the way, one in Belgium, and then Saturday morning I hitchhiked up from Basel to Le Brie, just with two lifts, basically, which was also remarkable. So there I was. Instead of staying just for a couple of weeks, I stayed for a year. I became either Schaefer's cook and gardener. And because of that, once the summer rush was over and all the hundreds of people who were there that summer at Le Brie, once the summer was over in September, started having prayer meetings in the early mornings for the people working in their home. And that was really how Vicky and I met. Some we were all too busy to really meet each other, to get to know each other. So we met in September. We got engaged in October and married in December that year. Went to California for our wedding and then introduced her to my parents on our honeymoon back in England, and then went back to carry on working for the Schaefers, working together there at Le Brie. And there's Edith, who liked to think she brought us together, but didn't in fact. Little history of Sylvester. Sylvester was raised in a home in a little town, Boynton, Oklahoma. Vicky and I visited his parents one summer while we were here as students at Covenant, and stayed with them overnight on our way out to California. After his time there, he was in the military for a while, then at a Christian college, and then joined Operation Mobilization. This is a very important history here. In November 1966, Schaefer had been invited to speak to the staff of Operation Mobilization at their headquarters in London. And he went there, and there's a very amusing story connected with that. He arrived late at night. Everybody had already gone to bed. You know, one of the OM guys heard somebody knocking at the door, went to the door, and welcomed Schaefer in. Schaefer, of course, which was typical of him, didn't say who he was. I'm your speaker. The guy said, are you hungry? Have you had anything to eat? No. He gave him some bread and butter and jam in the kitchen, and then gave him a mat on the floor where everybody else was sleeping. And Schaefer very happily accepted that. And the next morning, the young man was told off very profoundly by his boss for putting their speaker on the floor. But that was just typical of Schaefer. And while Schaefer was there, you know, he and Sylvester sat next to each other at a meal table. Sylvester also sitting in the back of a room, had lots of questions, and Schaefer invited him to come to Le Brie. So in February 1967, just 6 weeks or so after Vicky and I were married, Sylvester arrived at Le Brie in Switzerland. And I have to say that God just put a deep constraint on my heart to get to know Sylvester. So I have to say I pursued him. At first he was a little leery. Who is this guy? What's he talking to me, quoting poetry to me all the time?
Talking about flowers.
Flowers as we walk in the mountains there. And he thought, well, there must be some... Is he really safe? But I was obviously very happily married, so he thought, maybe he's okay. Maybe he's okay. But we became very good friends, and that friendship was consolidated on April 10th that year. It was the day of Martin Luther King's assassination. And Sylvester and I spent time together. He met Janet there at Lee, where she was working as Debbie's cook. They fell in love. He was telling me this morning he remembers Vicky and I inviting the two of them for a meal and playing Cupid, they thought. Actually, we just wanted to get to know them. We didn't need to be Cupid, but that was... And then they were married by Schaefer in London in November the 30th. That year, November the 30th, 68, and settled down there, both of them teaching in London, teaching in and around London, later in Luton, in Bedfordshire. So that's just a brief history. And just very simply, some of the things that Sylvester learned, some of the theological truths he learned from Schaefer, and also from Hans Ruckmacher, who was the head and founder of the Libri in the Netherlands with his wife, Anki. But what he learned from the two of them, and he spent a long time listening to both of them and talking to them, asking his questions, something about the loveliness of creation. That's, of course, why I was trying to show him the flowers up there in the mountains, which are spectacular. And today he actually does love flowers, so it stuck. The glory of human persons, of all human persons, as God's image bearers, the tragedy of our condition as rebels against God, God's great spiritual passion for the lost and for the outcast, and then the promise of renewal in Christ and in community, in human community. So the things as well, of course, but those are some things which have been in his life, in Janet's life, their life as a couple, as a family, and in his work as a teacher and as a photographer. So, Sylvester and I were talking about this the other day, and he said, when I left Libri, I basically had two questions, and this is summarizing what he said to me. Through Schaefer and Ruckmacher and my time at Libri, I'd come to grasp, to understand and to fall in love with a reformed world and life view, and what that means for all the arts, for photography as one of the arts, and for me in particular as an aspiring photographer. And the two questions he had, you know, on that kind of foundation were, one, where are there shoulders I can stand on as I try to use these gifts as a photographer to God's glory? That was his first question. I need some shoulders to stand on. The second was, is it just Libri, or do others, including unbelievers, see these things? Maybe Schaefer, Ruckmacher, Jerem, a prejudice in their views of Brent, and the Dutch artists of the 17th century, do others who are not Christian believers share their convictions about what these painters are trying to do? So those two questions. You know, one, the need for shoulders. One, is this really an accurate view of Rembrandt and the other Dutch painters? Well, he found some shoulders. He's got some pictures here we'll look at in a moment or two. So the shoulders he had to stand on, to learn from, were the 17th painters, and in particular Rembrandt.
And what he saw in them was the glory of ordinary human persons. One of the different things about those Dutch painters, Rembrandt especially, is
classical painters had painted gods and heroes, you know, heroic figures, and mythology. The Dutch painters, as Christians, saw that all humans have dignity, and so they painted ordinary people. Yeah, they were wealthy and powerful people if they were asked to, but most of their paintings are just of ordinary people, showing their glory and dignity. And the value of everyday life and occupations, just endless paintings of people cutting up vegetables, tasks, people sitting at the table, eating together, ordinary life, the dignity of the elderly and the poor. Many of Rembrandt's sketches and paintings are of,
you could say, of displaced people, of struggling poor people, of elderly people,
but showing the dignity of such people. Many paintings which just reveal the beauty of human communities. And then delight in landscapes, not kind of heroic landscapes, not dramatic or tragic landscapes, but just ordinary landscapes. And you see this in just these painting, as Schaeffer used to say, Reformation in Northern Europe. So this was he also discovered lots of books. He showed me one of the ones, he brought it into my office the other day when we had lunch together on Monday. You know, it's just dog-eared, it's torn, it's underlined. You know, it's one of the most messed up books I've ever seen, because he has just read it over and over again. You know, some of the print is hard to read because he's thumbed through it so many times. And he showed me a quotation. And this is from a writer, Jacob Rosenberg, Rembrandt, His Life and Work. It's a wonderful, wonderful little book, kind of one of the finest introductions to Rembrandt. And this is just one. It's not a writer at all, an atheist Jew. It was not only that he selected subjects of little interest, if not excluded by them, namely old, sick, or destitute people. In these subjects, he discovered the spiritual substance for which the Bible cared most, the human soul, in true humility or in sorest need of compassion and salvation. It's a beautiful statement. This is a non-Christian atheist recognizing what Rembrandt was doing.
Would you read that again?
Yeah. Not only that he selected subjects of little interest to the classicists, if not excluded by them, namely old, sick, or destitute people. In these subjects, he discovered the spiritual substance for which the Bible cared most, the human soul in true humility or in sorest need, compassion and salvation. I'm happy to pass these slides along to anybody who wants them. Now, Sylvester produced two books of photographs years and years ago. The first was Portrait of a Shelter. It's a portrait of Le Brie in Switzerland, which was published by InterVarsity Press in 1973. And here just some from the foreword by Francis Schaeffer. To me, there are four forms of judging a work of art. One, the question of technical excellence. Two, its validity, by which I mean the question of whether the artist is honest to his ideas or produces for the sake of the patron. Whether the patron be the ancient noble or the modern gallery. The content, the worldview, of which I'll speak in a moment. Four, the proper suiting of the vehicle being the worldview of the artist. I would say that with his natural gifts and hard work, Sylvester Jacobs has found a way to make his photographs excel on each of these levels. The worldview of Sylvester Jacobs, as I see it, is that man is made in the image of God, though man is fallen and flawed. Yet the fact of his existence and the fact of his personality still speak of the infinite personal God who is there, who exists, and who created man in his image. Man is redeemable. because he's qualitatively different from non-man. That's Schaeffer's words in the foreword, and a lovely assessment of Sylvester's work. And here's a personal note, which Janet and Syl just received this week from someone who'd come to have a meal with them, a lady who lives in Baltimore now. And she wrote this: "Sylvester, being included in Portrait of a Shelter has been an honor of a lifetime. I'm deeply grateful to be a part of the visual history of Le Brie. I cannot thank you enough." And then to Janet on a personal note, the photo is the perfect reminder of my greatest takeaway from being at Le Brie, i.e. what I learned about the beauty of the everyday. And of course that's everywhere in Sylvester's photographs too, just as in Rembrandt and the Dutch painters. "I can't say why at age 17 I was so struck by the simple beauty and warm ambience shown at every meal at Le Brie, but I was. It seemed to me that every meal was an artful occasion, lovely and gracious. Beauty intangible to me at the time that captivated my imagination. I don't quite understand how that beauty was achieved, but I recognized something very meaningful in those rich mealtime experiences that I sought to learn more about and have continued to pursue for my own home life over the years," all the way from 1972, you know, till today. And she goes on to write in her letter of the beauty of the everyday. His second book was The Portrait of England, published by Michael Joseph in London in 1976. And this is from the foreword to the book by Lila Berg. "For Sylvester Jacobs, England means numerous individual human beings. It means rich people, homeless people, disguised people, people crushed by circumstances, eccentric people, people making their mark, people making love. He will deliberately mingle pictures of famous people and public people and people who are unknown or very poor so that you have to recognize them equally as people, nothing more, nothing less. They could be Dutch paintings, many of these photographs. He has studied Rembrandt for a long time, but the fact that instead they are photographs makes their beauty and quiet insistence particularly compelling. They are records of unmanipulated fact rather than creations, so that one can less easily duck a calm passion." And then finally, from the cover, this is the Sunday Times correspondent. "As a visual essay, aspects of English life, it is full of character and freedom and whimsy. Neither quaint nor too cozy, but gritty and gentle and appealingly affectionate." So that's a perfect description of what I love. The photograph of my father that's in that book. And Sylvester, just as a little present to me, just made a blow-up of that picture. It's the finest photograph of my dad that anybody ever took. It was taken probably in 1970 while Vicky and I were here in St. Louis at seminary. Sylvester and Janet would go visit my parents. Now for the real reason for this workshop, and I'm sorry that took so long. And the real reason, of course, is Sylvester's photographs. Okay. And let's set them up here. Here we go. This is and I will let Sylvester say what he wants to about these as we go. Okay. There's...
Now, with this, sorry, mine is louder than his, and perhaps my voice as well. And it came from all that time with young folk, right? And when you're black and American, they figure in England that you must know something about basketball, so you learn to shout. That's okay. I mean, when I was younger, I had played in the NBA, all right? All right, I'm not trying to impress you, I just want you to know where I played. Yeah. And that was my neighbor's back alley. All right?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Shall I move along to the next picture here?
I was just waiting while they understood it.
Okay.
Right, but what happened with that young lady?
Okay.
And there was just there was photographs here, and you see the one of Dr. and Mrs. Schaefer. This is at Oz and Jenny's wedding.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the wedding of Oz and Jenny Guinness. Sill took this photograph.
But what happened is that, let's say we were studying art, we're looking. I'm not sure where the confidence comes from, because that's one of the things that was really, really important to understand. And that is that one in La Brea, I began to understand the concept that truth is one, and that God speaks our language. He speaks my language, irrespective of what the culture head says to me about who I am or who my people are. This is because watching the Christians, I doubt very seriously if I'd be a Christian today. Because I could see how they were toward me, how they were toward my folk. Why should I want to worship a God who hates me and who hates my people? But anyway, so we're trying to find the answers, and there I'm beginning to find the answers. And in case some still have a doubt, I says, well, if I'm the least and we are the least of people, God obviously takes it personally. You know the scripture, don't you? He says, what you do to the least of these, you do to me. All right. And so that was also a driving factor in trying to take the photograph. One, I wanted to understand in my language. Don't talk to me of science. Of course, science is interesting and very important, but I'm a visual. You know, when I discovered Holland, I discover that, goodness me, there's a whole culture. You know, and I'm in Italy. There are cultures that are just like me that understand the world visually. So let's talk about it like this. I will photograph, and as Dick was saying a moment ago, in the rough and tumble of life, I want to see the answers. I want to discover it. Show me who we are. And so now I'm looking for people, you know, on whose shoulders I can stand that are reformed. So eventually I discover the Dutch 17th century painters, you know, and their drawings and their work. So I just have two or three here that I want to show you. This is the second one. And if you look in the detail, you know, as Jeremy was saying earlier, you can see, you know, here they're giving the beggars. I don't know if that particular young girl is a beggar, but it's the relationship here. And we can go also quickly to the next one. Now, I want you to take your time and not look too quickly at the, I want to say a photograph, at the drawing. Here we have this lady. You can obviously tell it's a boy baby. You know, the shirt has come up. Mom is desperately frustrated with the child. And you can see he's kicking, throwing his arms, not knowing that, you know, if she lets go, he's going to hit the floor, probably tile or whatever, and it won't be very nice. And she's trying to keep him from falling. Correct him, maybe bring him back in. That I thought, you know, for years I thought this bit sticking out, but I think it's a door. I thought it was the old lady's apron, but I don't think so. And the old lady, look at her. It looks like not necessarily mother-in-law. Could be her mother. And then while you're watching that, you look at the other side, and you see the two kids laughing in the doorway. This is the stuff of life. These are the things that we have learned not to see, and yet it's all around us. As you look here now, and we see each other, when you look in the mirror, we have learned to, how do you say, block out our humanity. Because as it says in Romans 1, the very nature and character of God, you know, is clearly perceived. It's seen in the things that are made. And I'll ask you, with all your profound understanding, tell me, what bears the mark of the Creator more than we do? And then I'll photograph that instead. But we have learned not to see who we are. We have learned to see other things, and we make assumptions about what we're looking at. But we sit here in the presence. You know, ideally, I would like my photographs. I say we have an exhibition. You know, where we talk. For me, it's a discussion, like the film, and whatever. And it's just a discussion. We're talking about the ideas, about what's really going on. Right. So ideally, I have an exhibition. There are 100 photographs, and the Shekinah is so reflected, it's so strong that you can't go in. But it won't happen. Why? I mean, look at us. Look at the number of us sitting here now. You reflect the glory of God more than my photographs ever could, and yet we sit in each other's presence. So you'll always be able to walk into the exhibition. But the thing is, we have taken a secular view, even as believers, and it's been so difficult. I came here. You know, one of the reasons we came to St. Louis was because Jeremy and Vicky. You know, there are a couple of other. That's it.
That's it.
Not for some other reasons. And we were here. Didn't want to go to Oklahoma, but I won't go into all that story. But what I'm saying is, being able to talk with a minister or to talk with other folk about what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be made in the image of God? It's been like being on a desert. You can see me now. I'm not exactly starving. But my soul has been like that. You know, when, you know, in this song, and with Joseph in the multicolored, or the rainbow, whatever, his coat. This is as hard to see them from sideways on. That's what it feels like my soul has been. Coming here and not being able to discuss. You know, even in Sunday school, when you're trying to discuss, and it's like you have done something so absurd and so weird. You know, why do you want to talk about these things? Do you not understand? But listen, can I borrow your cup? Thanks, it's very kind of you. And you think of life as this, and says, I'm an artist. And think about it like this. Moses. And those of you who are studying to be the ministers and whatever, are you greater than Moses? And even Moses was told, go to Belalel and to the others, he says, in whom I have put my spirit. He sent him to the artist. That was Moses. And Moses, God spoke with face to face. And if you're only a humble preacher, why are you treating me with less respect? Am I not filled with the Spirit? Okay. And the other artist, God has blessed us this way. And so what I say with the cup is that we will ask a question. You know, the preacher talks to me, and often it's like, it's two-dimensional. Do you see the cup there? It's like this. It's like this. Where are we? Oh, you're going too far. Don't run me. Hold up. I'll get there.
Just went to the next one.
And so what happens, you ask, what does it look like here? What about there? What about there? What about there? You know, you look at it from many sides, and you're seeing things. And as Rookmacher would say, you only see what you know. And that's what these photographs are about, is seeing what you know, what you understand. All right? So here we're in China. It was just extraordinary. I mean, also thinking about China, because there's a young lady who had lived with us, and the family brought us to China. All right? Says, don't trust the Chinese. They're too nice. They're too kind. They look after us too well. But what happens is that also, you know, because my other mentor was a French photographer, Cartier Bresson, the great French photographer, but he was a surrealist. And so you learn to see things that you wouldn't normally look for. But and so you see the two young ladies taking photographs. And here, you're actually looking at what they see. But I didn't manipulate that. How is it that you see what they see? Because we're looking through at the terracotta soldiers. They're in a glass box. I'm looking through a glass. They're looking through a glass. But it's on the other side. And the glass on their side is reflecting what they see. That's why you see what they see. All right, but on this one, I mean, it was just a man sitting there in the quietness. I mean, with this one, it's like, how do you say, all my life I've been waiting to make the photograph like this. One, you know, you come here and I came back to America. It's like, wow, where, and I ask the question, where's Big Mama? You always have these things in your mind. You know, like, what's going on? Right, because you're discussing, you're trying to find out, understand life just in the rough and tumble. But here, and these girls and friends, they're responding. And it's like suddenly you're like you caught. You know, it's like the big one. Here's the life, and you can feel it. You can see it. Maybe you can't, but it's there. And they're not victims right here. And this one, we need to pause here a little bit.
You do indeed.
Okay. What happens here is this. I did not study photography. I have yet to study photography. Okay. And I'm relatively competent. All right? But what happens here, I studied art. That is my language. That's the language I speak. But I always had this fear of someone thinking, oh, you were imitating art. Or you were imitating the paintings and whatever. Says it never occurred to me. And I remember standing in one of the exhibitions, and there is the chair of Wash U, you know, the art department. He must have asked me six different times, are you sure you didn't paint this? I'm thinking, why would I bother to paint and take forever to make a painting like this when all I have to do is release the shutter? All right? But on the other hand, understand this much. I did not create this lady. And I love this particular one for lots of reasons. You know, across so many cultures, the folk have loved the smileys. And one lady said to me, she says, oh my goodness, you take the most loving photographs of women that I'd ever seen. Now, forget about me and listen carefully. Since what happens here is that, and I felt like, oh my goodness, that's like getting a Nobel Prize. But I hadn't earned it. But at the same time, I did not create this lady. This lady is created in the image of God, just like you. All I had to do was accept her. And I speak of it in terms of hanging a frame on it. I had photographed in so many other cultures, and when I got here, I wanted to see what America looked like through my eyes. And so with photographing her like this, I didn't do anything special. I just accepted her. That's all I've done. That's all I do with you. Now here we're actually we're in the loop. Just so it's relevant for you, we're in the loop. I'm looking through. We're in. What's the cafe? Janet. The Blueberry Hill. And we're looking through the window, and you can see the relationship with these folk. And it was a series, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and it was happening relatively quickly. It was almost like watching a movie. You didn't set it up. You just take it. You know, because life is just rich and full. And here we're in. Here we're in France. And oh my goodness, from edge to edge. You know, when you're studying Bruegel and you're studying all these guys with so many things going on. And if you're having to shoot it like a machine gun, 26 pictures to get one, just think, I only took two, maybe three to get that. Talent. Now, what happened is that. Oh, wait a minute. Go back. No, go back. And so what happens is that, you know, if you look at it, and this is definitely one I'd love to have at an exhibition in a place here in St. Louis, so you can have a chance to study it. It's that every moment and every person, you know, it's not some strange moment as you see only with a camera, but it's everything. Everything is just as it is, you know, because this is the way the world is. And you see so many strange things in photographs, but if you know that reality is there and the way God has created it, if you know it, then you can see it, you can find it, you look for it. And it's not a great strange thing, just expect it, you can go. Okay. And this, in another way, is the same kind of thing. You know, layer upon layer upon layer of relationships.
Yeah. This is, I'll say, add here, this is Sylvester and Janet's daughter in the middle and son-in-law on the left there. And several of their grandchildren there, and then a couple of friends here. It's actually at the rehearsal for the wedding.
The one who's looking away. It's actually her rehearsal. But to see the relationships. This is what's happening to us right now. It's all over the place, and it's rich, and it's loaded, and it's full. These things speak of the God who created us. It tells us about His character, about His nature. You'll have to chew on it like, you know, like a gobsmacker, they call them in England, you know, the big balls of candy. Don't even try chewing on it if you want to keep your teeth. All right? And it's all day, maybe even 2 days, 3 days, just to get through it. But this is the way relationships are and how we are related and how it's going on. But you can find it if you know it's there. But we have learned not to see it, even to deny our own. Now, we're going to get a little personal as well, because Forrest is here. No, you haven't put it on. Okay, yeah, okay, good. Because you do want to look away? Shall I tell you, look away?
It's not embarrassing, Forrest.
No, it's not embarrassing. It's because you haven't seen all of his wedding photographs yet, but we've got two of them here. All right? Okay, with this, and you tell me. You know, in my mind, I'm in China, and our culture teaches us so much. There are so many prejudices and other things, some good, some awful. And one of the things that's in my mind about the Chinese, you said inscrutable. What does that mean? Yeah, you can't understand them, you know, it's a mystery, whatever. I said, and so in my head, I'm thinking, show me. I don't believe you. Somebody asked me while we were in China, this is where you followed while you were in China. percent. Not very much. Not very it was kind of hard, to,
kind
keep
of hard
up.
To keep up.
All right. Come on, Celeste. Come on. You know, and the young lady who had lived with us. I mean, she was quite extraordinary. She still comes to look after us. Who are these people? All right? But you tell me you don't recognize these ladies and the emotion and the relationships. You have seen it. If you were looking, maybe you looked past it and didn't see it. There are only two or three other photographs like, and each one, you could have used anyone. Because this is who we are. We're of the same essence. We truly are of the same essence. Irrespective of where you find man. That's humanity, as opposed to women. I didn't discover women until... Oh, yeah, here we go. I mean, this is at the wedding. You recognize. And it was like a little... I mean, they were laughing. They were maybe being a little mischievous. I'm glad we can't see it. Because I wouldn't want to show that. I wouldn't want to embarrass them or to be in that kind of situation. But you know they're smiling. You see what's going on. Here we are. And there's this moment. You're a happy man. But what was also important here, the photographs will be clear, when you see it. But what happens here is that, of course, you can photograph. And I did have photographs of just the two of them. But it's like us. We're in relationship with other folk. And other people relate to us. And all of our lives are bound up together. To hear. This is a special moment for them, but it's in the context of the whole. It's like that.
Okay, we are a little over time already. And you have to get lunch. If people have questions they'd like to ask, please. Lots of his photographs here on this.
Okay, and thanks, Forrest, and you two guys for sharing your photographs.